Welcome to today's episode of SaaS Growth Marketers. This podcast is for every marketing leader of a SaaS business who wants to get unfiltered insights that will help them excel in their career. No BS bingo, no feather beds, just leaders speaking up. Leaders admitting where they failed and what they learned, and profiled guests that have the guts to enter the ring with an unconventional host, Frank Buckler. He's a marketer himself, but also an engineer, a programmer, and the inventor of a groundbreaking causal machine learning technology. Foremost, he leads a successful SaaS business himself, SaaSconversion.io. Now let's welcome today's guest. Frank, the stage is yours. Tim Matthews is the CMO at HackerOne and worked in high tech for 20 years and managed marketing teams at 7 companies. He is the author of The Professional Marketer and a syndicated blogger. Tim is also a frequent speaker on marketing topics and has given guest lectures at U.S. Berkeley's Tech Incubator, the NASDAQ Entrepreneur Center, and Stanford Graduate School of Business. When not writing or poring over marketing text, he golfs, crosswords, and tries to keep up with his wife on a stand-up paddleboard.
Hi, Tim. Good morning.
Hey, how are you? Great to be here.
So your topic today is why most B2B SaaS marketers ignore proven conversion techniques. So that's a bold statement, huh?
Bold, but true.
Bold, but true.
Yes, I've talked to enough growth marketers or growth hackers, if you like. I've talked to enough, I'll call them conventional SaaS marketers, to know that not everybody is taking advantage of all the great conversion techniques that are now available to us.
So where did you meet them? And conferences or?
Yeah, I've met them all over. I've met them at growth conferences. I've met them at specific conferences about different conversion techniques. I've met them at general marketing conferences. I've met them for lunch. I work here in Silicon Valley and I meet a lot of high-tech marketers, a lot of SaaS marketers. And I just know a lot of folks are still stuck in enterprise software land.
What's that land?
Enterprise software land is doing marketing the old way, relying really only on things like events, direct mail, a bit of online, but not really thinking like a growth marketer. Thinking about somebody who is simply arming salespeople as opposed to someone who's bringing leads, you know, right into the company using various growth techniques.
So that headline really makes probably the audience quite interested. What are these proven conversion techniques? Can you give some examples of techniques that are basically kind of home runs from, but still seldomly used? Do you have an example?
Sure. We'll get into some more details, but I think my number one home run technique would be conversion rate optimization. You can always make your website or your forms better, and it's just gravy. People are already coming to your site. If you can make 1 or 10 or 100 more people convert, right? Call it a home run, call it an order of magnitude difference, can make a huge difference. But that's one of many techniques, you know, including SEO and others that we'll talk about. But I think the bigger picture is thinking about the buyer's journey, which everyone probably does, and thinking about, do you have a culture on your marketing team that is trying to optimize at all stages, top of the funnel, mid funnel, all the way down to how you train your salespeople. That's the mindset, that conversion mindset that a lot of enterprise marketers still don't have. And it's a shame because they're essentially wasting opportunity.
So why is it? What do you think? Why do B2B SaaS marketers ignore them or don't do them? Do you have a hypothesis?
I do. I've thought a lot about this and I was going to give you a different answer, but something just occurred to me based on my experience that I think is the number one reason. The number one reason why people don't think about conversion is it's a lot more work. It takes a lot of work to not just build a website and publish a website, but continuously optimize your website. Just think about the difference in manpower. It goes from hiring an agency and having a few months or 6 months of, you know, design reviews and content creation to an ongoing process. And a lot of marketers aren't used to working that way and having a team that's set up to be constantly optimizing, publishing content, revising content that's gotten stale. It's a lot more work. But in fairness to folks who, you know, maybe have that work ethic, I think it comes down to really three things. One is, I think that if you've never worked in a SaaS environment, in a high growth SaaS environment, and many marketers get hired into those environments, they don't understand. They've never learned it. You know, if they hadn't had to work in an environment that was really scrapping to grow, you just don't understand what it looks like. The second one is they've never been really trained formally how to do it. And the third is, like I said, they've never had to. If you had a comfortable enterprise software existence and you've never had to really optimize to grow, you've never had the opportunity to learn it, as opposed to folks who maybe their first job was with a small SaaS company and they just by virtue of the circumstance had to learn it on the job. So I think those are the main reasons, but I do think that there's a certain amount of, I won't call it laziness, but just it takes a lot more energy to get it done. And I'm not sure everyone's up for that.
I mean, I would imagine that at least most have done some kind of optimization. But of course, this is a very, this is a broad range. But what kind of CRO hack would you have in mind, which probably everyone could use here in the audience?
Yeah, let's go back to my opening comment. I think that thinking about conversion rate optimization on your website is probably one of the most ignored areas. I know that this is true because the CRO companies, notably Optimizely, for example, but others, they just haven't grown. Think about the growth of those companies compared to the growth of like a Marketo or, you know, even something like MailChimp. So in other words, people are spending a lot of money on email marketing, but they're not spending a lot on the conversion optimization tools. So, you know, that to me is a shame because I've had tremendous wins. And there's great blog posts and plenty of evidence to show that if you change the wording, change the offer, change the picture, or all the above, you can have tremendous impact on your conversion. And I think people, I said before, maybe they were ignorant of this, but I think enough people have probably heard of Optimizely and know what it is. I think there's also maybe a bit of bias that this is only for B2C companies or e-commerce companies.
Yeah.
I know that most of the clients of these kinds of tools tend to be in those areas, but they can apply equally well to a site that doesn't have quite the traffic and has a higher ticket product because you're doing the same thing. You're making the experience more efficient.
Yeah, I can really relate to that. We heard her in sales conversation often at SaaS Conversion Hour that companies saying, oh, we don't have traffic. We have not enough traffic. But actually, yeah, because most are B2B SaaS companies, but actually most of them have 10,000 or 20, even 20,000 or much more traffic.
Yeah.
So with 10,000, they consider themselves low traffic, but it's a lot to really improve.
I agree. It may take you longer. For those who don't know, the way these packages typically work is you have to get enough visits and results to be statistically significant, but you can also see trends and make some educated guesses, or you can just run the test for longer. It may take you longer to get a result. It may take you 3 months or 4 months and not, you know, a week or two like one of those high volume sites might, but it's still worthwhile. And the way these things work is you set them up and you have to monitor them or have someone monitor them for you, but it doesn't take a lot of energy to let them run. Pretty basic.
And yeah, that's pretty much also my mission, to help companies make this exercise much shorter. Huh? Mm. But you mentioned also that there are other areas, proven tactics. I think you mentioned content marketing, right? So
yep.
My impression is also, this is also something on the first view is on everybody's plate. So which hacks are company missing to properly drive traffic with content marketing?
Right. I think content marketing, if you went back maybe 3, 4, 5 years, it may not have been as prevalent. It went through a similar path, perhaps, as CRO, I hope will someday, where people dismissed it and thought, again, it was only for growth companies. But I think now it is more common. To answer your question, I think that companies should be doing more investigation of successful content. So using search to find the content that's most found. and trying to then replicate and make it better. It's really an arms race, but it's not that difficult if you have a good team to take a look at the post that is being served up by Google as the first or second result and looking at how good it is, because Google doesn't just rank based on, you know, your domain authority or the links. A lot of it has to do with how long readers are engaged with it, how it displays on mobile, really how good the quality of the piece is. There are a lot of quality signals that Google uses. So if you can look at a piece and make a piece that's better, that's a good growth technique. Of course, you got to have a decent domain, spend some time link building, but a lot of times quality content will rule the day and will jet you up higher up in the rankings.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And the other thing about this is there's this term that's not as common anymore called shovelware. And the idea was you would just shovel a bunch of, back in the day, it was shovel a bunch of crappy software, but it also came to mean shoveling a bunch of so-so content. And simply having a blog on a topic isn't sufficient anymore. You've got to look at the quality of the content and rank it in your, or I should say, assess it against the competition and try and build better content.
And it's kind of similar also to conversion rate optimization in a sense that you need to test and try out things. So from my experience, sometimes a blog article pops up. Yeah, you just wrote it a year ago, but now it's on page number one and you think, wow. And you look closer and you say, oh, I used so simple language. People really liked it. And so yeah, you take this away then, right?
That's true. A great tactic in content marketing is to repeat your winners or repeat your winning techniques. And look, Google will never tell us what's in their algorithm and it may not work, but if there are certain things you did a piece, whether it was a particular graphic or a length or a language you used, or I had a success where we took old blog posts and popped in newer YouTube videos on the topic into the blog post, and that made it more accessible to more people. And Google rewarded us for that piece of content and bumped it back up again. So there are ways to go back and refresh content or take techniques from one bit of content and apply to another. And as you say, what works for your buyer, you'll have to find out, because different types of buyers want different types of content. And what might work for one, like a listicle or an infographic, may not work for someone who wants a white paper or an ebook or an in-depth blog post, whatever it might be.
Right. So we had conversion rate optimization, content marketing. What else would you suggest? What are proven conversion?
I think SEO is another area that people will say they do it, but they're not really doing it. It's kind of like going for a jog once a week versus being on a weight loss program. It takes a lot more energy to do SEO correct. And maybe that's not even the best analogy. A better analogy would be I run a marathon or a 10K once a year, and then I forget about it until next year. A lot of people, when they do SEO, what they do is they build a new website, and in the process of building a site, they do some amount of keyword research. They appropriately do the technical bits of SEO correctly. But SEO is an ongoing process, and it requires you to, as we were just talking about, create the right content and then monitor your content to see how it's performing against competitive content. Just as a quick aside, I often tell people that I have my in-the-market competitors, people I'm selling against. I work for a software company. And then I have my SEO competitors who may or may not be exactly the same set of competitors, but they're bidding for or trying to get the same keywords with SEO. And so it's funny, and I kind of recognize who's doing SEO well. I see the same companies pop up again and again in my sphere, which happens to be cybersecurity. So there's overlap between different segments. But anyway, you can tell who's doing it right. And those who are doing it right are paying attention to the content, refreshing their content. In many cases, as I've had in the past, they have an agency. It's interesting, people will pay $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 or more per month for a PR agency and not have an SEO agency. But if you think how people are finding things these days, they're searching on Google. So why wouldn't you want your content to come up if someone's searching for a particular topic? So I just think that there's, again, this older mindset that SEO is a once and done process when you're building a new website. And I disagree completely. It's a continuous process. And I would fully encourage assigning staff to it and potentially hiring an agency to do it.
What about social? So are there certain areas you would recommend working on? So social is big. Yeah, there are many different platforms for B2B SaaS. What would be a platform which is typically overlooked?
Right. So first of all, you made a great point. There are lots of different social platforms. You have to decide which ones are important. And, you know, I will admit that in my jobs, I've tended to focus on a couple. For me, it tends to be LinkedIn primarily, and then Twitter to a certain extent. For other people, it might be Facebook or others. One area that's sort of in the social realm is that I've been guilty of ignoring for too long is YouTube, which you can think of as social, you can think of it as content. But that was an area that I mistakenly, and I will fully admit my mistake, assumed was simply entertainment, and therefore dismissed it as something not really relevant for B2B. But what I learned is that people go to YouTube to learn skills, and they try and learn. And it's amazing what you can type in almost any topic into the YouTube search box and find pretty relevant content, whether it's accounting or welding or oil drilling or cybersecurity or whatever you want. Chances are there's a bunch of video content on the topic. So that's an area that I ignored in sort of the social realm that I'm not ignoring anymore.
Right. So people go to YouTube to learn stuff, right?
And yeah.
So, and if I take Steve Jobs saying marketing is education, This would mean go to YouTube and educate, right?
Yeah, I didn't know Steve Jobs said that. I'm obviously a big Steve Jobs fan. I often say that leading is teaching. So I have a similar mindset. I didn't steal that from him, I promise. But I do think that if you teach somebody something relevant to getting their job done, you've opened the door to having them consider your product, and at least you've elevated your brand because you're not selling them, which people don't like. They want to learn something, right? So I do agree that if you can teach and get people kind of thinking about how to use your product in the realm of solving their problem, you've begun a sales process.
I pretty much like once in a while seeing Steve Jobs videos on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
He said things 30 years ago, which becomes popular now, like content.
Yeah.
That's really amazing.
Yeah, it is true.
You wrote a book recently or a few years ago, right?
Yeah, I think it's been a while. I think it's been 5 years, actually. Can't believe it's been that long.
I even bought it.
Thank you.
I didn't have the time to read it all, but took a look at it. So it's very, very interesting and kind of different to books I would expect in the matter of marketing books. What was your intention to write this book? It's called The Professional Marketer. It's blue.
Yep. In fact, what you mentioned is why I wrote it. What I found was a lot of really good single topic marketing books, whether it's things like Ogilvy on Advertising or strategy books like Blue Ocean Strategy, they tended to be focused on a single idea. And they're all great books. I've got a bunch of them sitting here on my bookshelf, which you can't see in front of me. And then I found there were these college textbooks about marketing that I took a look at and didn't really cover what I thought was more pragmatic, hands-on, the marketing that I knew. And I was looking for these books because I found in managing marketing teams that many people have a very narrow view of marketing and they've never been properly cross-trained. So what I wrote was what I think of as a handbook, and it's designed to be digested in small parts or referred to when you need it, kind of like any handbook would be that you want to write a press release and you've never done one before, or create a marketing budget or create a messaging platform, things that people don't always do or they've not been trained on. So that was the gist. So I couldn't find it, so I wrote it. I wasn't intending to write a book, but I ended up writing a book. It took a lot longer than I thought it would.
Did you wrote it for your team at that time or?
Yeah, I wrote it with my team in mind. I didn't literally, require them to read it, but I had met enough people and was working at a large company at the time, so there were a lot of marketers. And they were my inspiration, if you will, to write the book. I knew there were many more people like them out there. Some of them have read it over the years. I don't want to be that guy, that professor that makes his students read his book. So people have found it and enjoyed it, but I have not made it required reading for my teams.
So basically, this is recommended for professionals or marketers who want to have their team, which may be from other areas.
Yeah.
And from sales or from other areas.
I'll tell you, the people who have bought the book and enjoyed it the most have been CEOs of startups who are now managing marketing but don't have a really good grasp. People who are moving from a specific discipline like product marketing into a broader role as a CMO, who may not have done things like created an org structure or a marketing budget. People, for example, that have worked in PR and they're moving into a broader role. And then, as you say, people who are brand new to marketing who need those pragmatic skills. And it's funny, I was a computer science major in college, and a lot of what I learned was foundational, but wouldn't prepare me for my first day on the job as an SE, even how to log into the server. Just really practical stuff that you need to know, you might be asked to do.
Yeah. So I can really confirm that this is actually, it works like that. It's really great, very practical language. So I basically, from the title, I would have expected kind of a textbook, but it's really not. It's a great walk through all those different areas you need to know about as a marketer. Right?
So, yeah, I appreciate that. Try to make it a little breezier than a college textbook, so it's easier to consume. And then you mentioned also, you know, things that Steve Jobs said 30 years ago still being true. What I found in writing the book is how much of modern marketing was created in the 60s. Things like focus groups, various forms of advertising. We talked about email marketing just a little bit. Some of the direct mail techniques that were pioneered in the 60s that are still relevant today for subject line testing and email. So it was interesting what I found out when I wrote the book too, about how much of the history of marketing is still very relevant today.
Exactly. I mean, if we talk about outbound marketing or something like that, it was called 30 years ago direct marketing, right?
Yeah.
And I think your headline in the book is direct marketing. And
yeah,
they were optimizing A/B testing at that time as well, right?
They were sending people letters,
yeah,
and changing subject lines. And unlike today, they were waiting weeks to see if their campaigns were effective, selling all kinds of stuff via the U.S. Postal Service. Yeah.
This being said, the book has been published 5 years ago, I think.
Yep.
Do you think it needs now rework or update, or would you rather think it's written like the basics are still true for another 10 years?
What I'll say is I tried to write it so it would be durable and would last for 10, 20 years. However, I wrote in the afterword that I knew that new stuff would come around. Like Instagram was barely a thing when I wrote the book, for example. So I tried to make it generally relevant. So I think it still is relevant. If there's one thing I'd want to update, probably would be some of the case studies that I have in the book, or maybe want to put a sprinkling of new ones, but also keep some of the old ones. I have one in the book that goes back to the 1800s, where Smirnoff Vodka was selling vodka using word of mouth marketing, which I think is still fascinating and relevant today. But I'd probably want to add a few more and maybe expand on some of the, I'd probably put more in about video, for example, than I have in the book.
Yeah. We talked a lot about obvious hacks everyone should explore. So where is the future bringing us? How will other hacks look like in 2025 or 2030? Do you have a vision?
You know, I'm not an oracle, but I'm a student of marketing. So I think my mistake was not paying attention to what was happening around me. So I talked about how I sort of missed the boat initially on content marketing, wasn't really taking it seriously. I missed the boat on YouTube. So I think the future of marketing is probably all around us today, and we have to just pay attention to it. So for example, I don't think Instagram is really relevant for what I do. However, I'm noticing more and more influencers are publicizing their content on Instagram. A lot of the YouTube influencers that I work with at my previous company publicize their videos on Instagram. So the question is, are we missing an audience by not doing something there, either directly or with influencers? So I think keeping an eye on, you know, some of these and not being dismissive of some of these new trends, I think is really important. And every CMO should revise his or her worldview every couple years and make sure that nothing's being missed. And I think a great way to do that too is make sure you have enough, kind of young folks on your marketing team to bring the fresh ideas in that you might initially think are a little bit crazy or naive, and you may end up finding out that they've been actually very prescient and very important.
Yeah.
And especially if your customers are the age of some of your younger marketers, they can be the keys to teaching you how to reach those people. And people may not want to read papers or ebooks anymore. And, I was surprised, going back to YouTube, how many people would rather watch 10-minute video, or I would rather just, kind of look at a blog post and skim past the parts that I think are not relevant. Because as we all know, a lot of YouTube videos are sort of not professionally produced and a lot of wasted space. But some people just will love to have the videos as a way of learning. And just a small little one that I learned, subtitles aren't just for people that have accessibility issues. Quite often they're people who have small apartments or are watching video on a train, for example, and don't have their headphones handy. So things like that you just need to pay attention to. How people are consuming the content is interesting. And even things like the results on a desktop are different than the search results on a mobile device quite often in the content that's served up. You might find more video content served up when someone's searching on their mobile phone. So just watching things like that, being aware of things like that, I think are the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. Good advice. So which advice would you have to me? So basically, which question would you have asked if you would be me?
The one thing we didn't talk a lot about is people and finding the right kind of people for your team. I talked about how it's a lot more work and takes a lot more rigor and in some cases takes some fresh ideas. So as a head of marketing, you may decide not to hire conventionally, and you may want to think about hiring for certain skill sets. So for example, you may want someone who's very good at experimentation and measuring to run your SEO. And someone who may not even be a marketer, or someone who might want to get into marketing, for example. You may want to hire somebody who's really good at content creation, which I think is really important. We talked about how important that is. I haven't done this yet, but I've toyed with the idea of hiring a film student on the marketing team. So after all, not every English major becomes a novelist. Not every film student is going to become a director, but you've got people who are familiar with storytelling, video editing, and creating compelling video content. So thinking about the types of skills you want on your team, not just the traditional marketing titles, I think might be really important for folks who want to do growth really well.
Mm-hmm. New skills. So you also talked a lot about that it's not a one-time shot. CRO and SEO and everything. So this requires probably also different personality.
I'm glad you asked me that question. So in my previous company, I hired a director of content who came from the publishing world. I'm not the first to do this. But the difference is that people who come from the publishing world are used to writing and publishing every day or maybe every week, as opposed to product marketers who can't wait to be done with a project. So you want someone who's got the mindset of, I'm going to produce articles every day, every week, or every couple of days. And it's not a chore. It's something that they enjoy.
Yeah.
And so that just different personality type was very helpful for my team because it brought in this perspective and the personality that was used to working at that pace. I think that's really important to kind of match the interest, of course, but also the job pace, the job expectation with the job.
Yeah. I think it applies also to conversion rate optimization. If you optimize friendly and landing pages, it's tedious because you come up with lots of hypotheses, you gather all this expert judgment, but most of the time it doesn't work.
That is true. Yeah, you've got to have someone who's relentless, someone who doesn't get frustrated, someone, not that you would necessarily hire a scientist, but a lot of scientists have probably more failures than successes in their experiments. And so someone who's able to kind of power through the failures. The nice thing about the tools today is you can run multiple at the same time in different areas in your site. So hopefully some of those have some chance of success. Because, and I'll say too, that if you're new to CRO, chances are there's some low-hanging fruit that will be successful. It's when you get better at it that perhaps it takes longer to find those incremental gains.
I totally agree. Cool. Yeah, could talk for hours, but maybe we do this in another episode next year or so.
Another episode or over a beer or coffee after COVID is behind us.
Yeah,
I could talk marketing for days.
Let's do that. Let's continue that. And I recommend also to read your blog post. You have a marketing blog, right?
Yeah, Matthew's on marketing. Yep.
I put it in the description of the episode. It was really, really interesting chatting with you today. I think that were quite valuable tips for everyone.
Yeah, great talking as well. I hope that more people embrace growth and experimentation. It's really going to help your marketing.
I agree. Cool. Tim, thank you for the time today.
It's been great. Thanks.
Enjoy. Bye.
Take care.
This was another episode of SaaS Growth Marketers. Find upcoming guests at sasconversion.io/podcast. Do you want to be a guest too? Apply there, sasconversion.io/podcast. SaaSConversion.io is an inside service that's already added billions in ARR for growth stage SaaS companies by uncovering hidden conversion barriers. Its proprietary AI has already catapulted T-Mobile from a nearly ruined underdog to a leading mobile carrier. It's paved the way to Sonos IPO and is today a secret weapon of the world's largest software company, Microsoft. How does it work? You find it at sasconversion.io. Thanks for listening. See you at our next episode.